This is The Guardian.
Regid Ahmed here on Gadigal Land with the full story.
Well, the party has changed, and one of the things that's happened in the party is we are more cohesive, more united than we've ever been before.
The climate that exists in the party at the moment about having a different view is one that's not valued as it should be.
Labor MP Ed.
Some figures in the current government, including Anthony Albanese himself, made their careers having big fights at these conferences and changed party policy by arguing about it at Labor conferences. These days, they're much more controlled affairs.
Today, political editor Tom McElwain. It's Tuesday, the 28th of July. Hi, Tom. It's great to have you with us in the Full Story studio.
It's great to be with you, Regid. Thanks for having me.
You're in Sydney at the moment. You've just come in from Adelaide from the Labor conference. You were there for the Australian Politics podcast and covering events for The Guardian. What do you think was different about this conference compared to past ones?
I think Labor put a lot of effort into making sure that they presented a united front, that there weren't heated debates about changes to the national platform on the floor of the conference, and that as an extension to how the government presents its policies, the Labor movement, lowercase Labor movement, the whole show, as they say, was united and pulling in the same direction.
Is that different to past ones? Was it more controlled?
It is more controlled. It's often said that Labor conferences of decades past have had big policy fights. I think it's important that we tell our listeners that the conference exists to update Labor's national platform once every parliamentary term. So every 3 years, they go all the way through their platform, and the platform is the foundation from which policy is built on top. And it must be said that some figures in the current government, including Anthony Albanese himself, made their careers having big fights at these conferences and built their profiles and changed party policy and decided what they believed by arguing about it at Labor conferences. These days, they're much more controlled affairs. Where there is that policy conflict, where there are those internal debates, they mostly happen in back rooms. They often happen before the conference actually gets underway. So once delegates assemble, many of the deals are already stitched up.
Does that mean vigorous debate is happening? It's just behind closed doors?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's less heated than it has been in decades past, but Labor members do take this very seriously and they do very much care about the language that's put in the platform. I think AUKUS is one good example here. There was a movement from some branch members around the country to get motions up about AUKUS this time, and they were blocked at the branch level. There wasn't support for language and debates about AUKUS at the conference. But that doesn't mean that it didn't happen in branch meetings and in factional meetings.
So there is this real sense of control, and we've seen Ed Husic talk about this. He's given another interview. We're speaking Monday morning. He's spoken on Breakfast Radio. He tried to get debate up on Israel and Palestine. It didn't materialise. So before we talk about Ed Husic, can you just explain what happened there that's made him so disappointed?
The background is that Ed Husic has been an increasingly outspoken member of the Labor caucus. Of course, he was a cabinet member until after the last election when he was pushed out of cabinet in a factional deal. And he has become increasingly outspoken in the months since. He had a draft resolution. He wanted to put in new language into the platform about the Israel-Gaza conflict, including recognition of the international court that the Palestinian people had a plausible claim to be protected from genocide. He wanted language included that acknowledged the findings of a UN independent commission of inquiry along the lines that Israeli authorities and security forces had deliberately targeted Palestinian children. This was viewed internally within Labor as a potential political problem, that there would be a big fight along these lines, that they would open themselves up to criticism from Jewish Australians, from the coalition, from across the spectrum. So Husic was blocked from doing this. He sought seconders for his motion. as people expressed interest in seconding the motion, they were convinced not to.
But that issue was still discussed.
It was. There was a joint motion from two Labor MPs, Josh Burns, a Jewish MP, and Bassem Abdo. They had a symbolic moment at the conference that was organised in advance. Both sides of the conflict represented through these two MPs who represent different communities and different electorates. That left Ed Husic marginalised and I think frustrated. And he has spoken out repeatedly again today.
I find the Ed Husic example really fascinating because I wonder that because he's been isolated, you sort of see that lack of dissent at the same time. Like, which is it?
Yeah, I think it might be the latter. I think he is isolated. There are people within the party who share his views. And I think probably there are people at high up points in the party who, if all things were straightforward, would prefer to have this kind of debate. But because he has frustrated some of his colleagues and because the decision had been taken for this symbolic process that we talked about, Ed Husic was left out on his own. And I think he's starting to sort of welcome that position as an irritant sometimes to the party and an outspoken person.
Let's turn to then what it says about Anthony Albanese. As a prime minister, you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but he has a history as an MP of being a real agitator. And now we're seeing a prime minister perhaps that isn't welcoming dissent. Is that a fair point?
I think that's fair enough. I think he prefers a controlled and methodical approach. I think it really reflects the way that he leads the government and leads the Labor Party. I think it reflects his personality as well. The tension that underlines this whole government, 4 years in power now, getting ready to go for a third term, 18 months or so away, the tension that underlines it is, what is Labor for? Are they there to lead the country this cautious, methodical approach that Anthony Albanese prefers? Or should they be taking on more ambitious reforms, shaking things up, delivering the things that Labor always says they're about? That's the tension.
That's a really fascinating point because the Prime Minister would say, this is a party that's won a huge majority. So in that sense, that kind of discipline and unity maybe isn't a surprise.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think he has a real claim along those lines. Before the last election, was expected to go backwards in the parliament, even to go into minority. Instead, they won this thumping victory against Peter Dutton, 94 seats in the lower house. It's a significant majority. Now, he says, that's because I told people what we were going to do. I told them how we were going to do it and we delivered. Let's repeat that process and continue to hold confidence. The other thing that he says is that there's chaos at all the other points of the political spectrum. One Nation and the Coalition, the Greens, everybody else is in flux. Labor's the constant. Why would we put that at risk politically?
Don't change the formula.
That's right. That's right. He really gets his back up when he's asked about ambition and whether this is a bold reforming government or not. Those are the dynamics in the government and in the parliament. And I think partly they've flowed down into the national conference. You know, the leader sets the tone for these things. He's the leader of the party. He's a singular power base in the party because of his political success.
But back to your point then about this tension where should Labor be the status quo stable government or should it be a big reforming government? How should we view this argument that if Labor can't hear vigorous debate, then it's going to struggle to deal with the economic grievance that's feeding a party like One Nation? Several times at the Labor conference.
Oh, absolutely. I wrote at the weekend that they might as well have made Pauline Hanson a delegate. She was so much a presence in the conference. This will be the question of the next 2 years. Is Labor up to the radical shift that is going on in our politics? Can Anthony Albanese's method of stability, predictability, reliability withstand all of the chaos that's going on? I don't know the answer to that, and we'd be reckless in trying to predict. But he believes that the answer is a relentless focus on measures that will improve people's lives every day. So cost of living assistance, things to help families. You know, at the conference, they made announcements about paid prac placements for people in health degrees. It's not a bold, nation-changing policy, but it's something that helps people get into the jobs that we need, gaps that we need filled in our society, in our economy. I think that if his method proves successful, this will be a marker of his time in government. After the chaotic Rudd-Gillard years, after 10 years of shifting prime ministers under the coalition, that there's been at least two terms, maybe three, of one prime minister cautious and methodical approach to policy delivery.
What about this history that people are talking about, that this is a prime minister that saw the Rudd-Gillard years and the dystopian moment that the Labor Party was in where they fought, and he simply thinks that that would be just poison if we go back to those days?
I think he does think that. I think there are lots of people in the cabinet and people in the Labor caucus more broadly who are scarred by those years, people who spent their parliamentary careers building up to change the country, to be government ministers, implement their policies, do all the things that Labor wants to do, and had the rug pulled out under them because of destabilisation at the very top and, you know, toxic years between Rudd and Gillard. Anthony Albanese was the Deputy Prime Minister. He was a Cabinet Minister all the way through, Leader of the House. He had a front row seat to Labor tearing itself apart. The only other thing I would say is that the period in between is informative as well. They had Bill Shorten for two terms as the opposition leader after Rudd Gillard, and some within the party believe that they were too ambitious on policy. Anthony Albanese comes along in 2019 and pulls them back a little bit, succeeds in 2022, wins government, becomes prime minister, then in 2025 wins a big majority. So I think he thinks he's getting the balance right. Now, the period that we're talking about, even after the Howard government and Labor's difficult times in opposition under Howard and then difficult times in government under Rudd and Gillard, the policy debates about things like asylum seeker policy and how to stop boat arrivals into Australia, these were the big debates and they really tore themselves apart. I think Anthony Albanese prefers have the policy debates in the back rooms, don't show your dirty laundry to the public.
We'll be right back. Tom, I was also really interested in hearing about how the Prime Minister was credited or criticised, depending on your perspective, of controlling the factions and that element of chaos that sometimes comes into Labor. And it made me wonder, just briefly, how Labor is different and the point of the conference, let's say, compared to the Liberal Party. Is this method quite unique in Australian politics?
Yeah, the Liberals do it quite differently. Labor consider it a point of pride that they have this big open conference every 3 years. They invite the media in, they invite huge numbers of observers from business and the diplomatic community. Everything's on show, no secrets. The Coalition, the Liberal Party, the Nationals have similar conferences, but they do it in a less high-profile way. They'll do it annually instead of a big thing every 3 years. I think that point of pride is a little bit weakened when you've so controlled all of the debates as to not have any contested motions on the floor. But speaking from my perspective in the fourth estate,
if you're
going to pick one, you'd definitely go with the Labor approach where we're invited in and we can watch what's going on.
Before I get to just ending on what kind of policy we might see come out of this, I suppose the counterpoint to that is you might argue that when win.
Well, not only would they, but Kate Ellis, the new Labor president, said to me last week before the conference exactly that. Her view was that a good conference results in good changes to the platform, and if there are huge heated debates, we'll write that they're tearing themselves apart. I think you've hit the nail on the head right there, Richard.
Maybe it's our job too. So we'll park that to the side. The whole point of our chat here is that the Labor conference is meant to come up with bold policy. It's meant to discuss lots of ideas, get all that dissent and debate. And it's meant to filter up into something that we see materialise in legislation in the future wrapped in. What would you say might emerge from any of that we might see come to Parliament?
Yeah, well, I'd start by saying that state Labor parties follow the platform as well. So it's not just the federal question. I think gambling is an example of that. You know, there was a push from Darcy Byrne, the Sydney Inner West Mayor here in Sydney, on gambling reform. One thing that I think will eventually bubble up in the federal sphere is changes to rules for voluntary assisted dying. This was one point where there was a bit of debate in the conference and there was a change to the platform. So very briefly, this is a Howard-era law that bans telehealth service provision for people undergoing voluntary assisted dying. So doctors aren't allowed to provide medical advice over the phone or over a Zoom call to someone in that part of their healthcare journey. Now, the Labor platform has been changed to say that there should be a conscience vote on this question and that that telehealth exemption should be done away with. On Sunday, after the conference was over, Anthony Albanese signalled that it wasn't an immediate priority that the government would bring forward legislation. He said it's all well and good there's been a change to the policy, but the cabinet decides what happens in the federal parliament. So it's possible that Labor could move forward with it or leave it on hold, but since then, the Greens have signalled that they'll bring forward a private member's bill in the Senate, and Kate Chaney, the independent MP from Western Australia, has signalled she'll bring one on in the House. So Labor might have to make a decision either to block those private bills and do nothing or bring on their own plan. So that could be one example. Now, look, it's not a huge, bold change to the country, but for people in rural and regional areas who already have trouble going to the doctor, if they're at this end-of-life part of their healthcare, it could make a difference if the law is changed.
Okay, so we might see that happen. Clearly what happens at Labor conference does matter. Tom, it's so nice to have you in our studio. Thank you for talking to us.
It's great to be with you, Regid. Thanks a lot.
That was political editor Tom McElroy. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria. You listen to podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.